From the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers, this is The Taxi Link.
Been bothered by the police every time you cruise around? You get a ticket going around this place, this area. We need taxi stand right on the property of the hotel.
Outside the Gaylord Hotel on Friday, cab drivers at National Harbor demanded the hotel provide a taxi stand visible to guests. We'll play audio from that protest as well as from another one in New York City.
TLC is getting ready to vote on June 20th on a swooping set of, 12 regulations that would really crush the income of taxi drivers.
Then we'll be joined in studio by attorney, organizer, and driver advocate Aurora Vasquez, and we'll be opening up the phone lines to hear from drivers. This is The Taxi Link, brought to you by the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org. Friday morning, more than 40 cab drivers and supporters protested outside Gaylord Hotel at National Harbor, the luxury resort and mini city on the Potomac River just over the DC line. With few large tourist destinations in Prince George's, National Harbor plays a critical role for the county's cab drivers. And central to National Harbor is Gaylord National, the largest hotel on the East Coast with nearly 2,000 rooms. But for drivers, Gaylord's significance is even greater because guests from National Harbor's other hotels often walk to Gaylord to hail a ride. And while Veolia, the French transportation giant, is allowed to park its black sedans directly outside the hotel in the parking lot, taxis must wait on the third floor of a parking garage across the street, out of sight of hotel guests. Among those who spoke at Friday's protest was Daoud Khatib. The butcher-turned-cab driver told the crowd, "We have families to feed. We are here to make a living."
We're working at the Gaylord right now. We've been working here for the last 3-4 years. And we've been treated badly from the management, from the doorman, from everybody who runs in that hotel. Taxi cab stand has to be right in front of the hotel, not on the street.
Yes.
Been bothered by the police every time you cruise around. You get a ticket going around this place, this area. We need taxi stand right on the property of the hotel. We have the right to do that. We are not going to go from here until we get that stand on the property of the hotel. The doormans in Latrina last night, the doormans are a bunch of people where they'd rather give this job to the sedans, to the black cars, and leave the cabs. We had family to feed. We're here to make a living.
Yeah.
We're not coming down here to stand just to look at you guys.
Yeah.
We need a stand on the property.
Yeah.
Without a stand, taxi cabs will always be on the street right here protesting this management and this treatment. That's it.
That was Daoud Khatib speaking outside Gaylord Hotel. Another driver, Etanesh Dembel, called on the hotel to show drivers some respect.
My name is Etanesh. I would like to say something. We need some respect. We have the quality they need. And the Gaylord people keeping discriminating us. They don't need us. Whenever they don't have the sedan, they choose us.
That was Etanesh Dembel, the 32-year-old driver who was expecting her second child, was featured in a Washington Post article this week by Luz Lazo. The piece entitled, "Prince George's cabbies say Gaylord Hotel is pushing them out," begins like this. Most of the passengers Etanesh Dembel carries in her taxi are guests of the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center at National Harbor, but she fears that work won't last for long. The luxury hotel in Prince George's is introducing a private car service this month for its guests, and that could mean fewer fares for Dembel and the other cabbies who flocked to National Harbor after it opened 5 years ago. That again from a Washington Post article, which we'll link to at thefightback.org. The piece discussed Gaylord's expanded contract with Veolia. Beginning this month, the French transportation giant is expected to not only provide Gaylord guests with black sedans, but also with more affordable hybrids meant to compete directly with taxis. Cab drivers fear this will be devastating to their ability to earn a living at National Harbor, particularly since the competition with the hybrids is likely to be unfair, with the cars placed directly outside the hotel like Veolia's sedans, while taxis remain hidden from guests in a parking garage across the street. This was a major reason for Friday's demonstration. We'll talk more about driver struggles at National Harbor as well as throughout Prince George's County and the region with Aurora Vasquez, who will be joining us in studio. In D.C., the Taxi Commission has scheduled a special meeting to consider regulations for its new sedan class of vehicles. But some of those proposed regulations are proving to be unpopular with Uber and other sedan operators. The regulations include requiring cars in the sedan class to weigh no less than 3,200 pounds and be less than 5 years old. Ward 3 Councilmember Mary Che, chair of the Committee on Transportation and the Environment, said some of the regulations seem heavy-handed. Che spoke with WAMU's Martin DeCaro. Here's part of his report.
Now, if they're approved without changes, Uber, the tech company roaring the loudest about D.C.'s regulatory system, complains it won't be allowed to use smaller hybrid vehicles in its sedan service. Che says that restriction would make no sense.
Some of them seem heavy-handed to me and not necessary, and they may reflect an overly protective approach to something that doesn't need protection.
Taxicab Commission Chairman Ron Linton declined to comment on the proposed regulations because they're still making their way through the process, but did say, "We take comments submitted in writing very seriously and give careful consideration to what's being said."
That was WAMU's Martin DeCaro. In addition to Uber and Councilmember Che, the D.C. Taxicab Commission is facing scrutiny from another and unlikely source, the Federal Trade Commission. In comments submitted to the Taxi Commission, the FTC raised concerns about the recent amendments to Chapters 12, 14, and 16 of the D.C. Code. Those amendments deal with regulating taxi smartphone applications as well as sedan-class vehicles. Some of the rules proposed by DCTC may unnecessarily impede competition, the FTC said in a statement posted to its website. Among the regulations FTC is questioning is one that requires those cab drivers who drive for a company that has successfully bid to become a payment service provider, requires those drivers to use only that company's PSP. The FTC also raised concerns about the requirement that PSPs provide data to the Taxi Commission every 24 hours, the security of the transmission of that data, as well as technical barriers being put in place that may restrict competition. And in a follow-up to last week's show, details for the funeral service for Solomon Okoro are still being finalized. Mr. Okoro, a 57-year-old father of five, was shot and killed last week in Adams Morgan while driving two passengers in his cab. According to an email I received from Classic Cab owner Evelyn Ruiz earlier today, the coroner's office has told the family that Mr. Okoro's body is ready to be picked up. Mr. Ruiz also said the family may be struggling to pay for the funeral arrangement, and the funds she set up to assist the family has raised just $1,300 to date. Donations can be sent to the Okoro family via the company, and we'll post that company's info at thefightback.org. Also, in regards to Solomon Okoro's killing, I received an email from Yellow Cab General Manager Roy Spooner, which read in part, "Mr. Okoro's death is a very sad indictment on the regulators, mainstream media, and the elite folks who often characterize taxicab drivers as rogues when most drivers are hardworking, dedicated, and honorable men and women. It is a very dangerous profession, and these honorable drivers do their best to serve every passenger despite the very adverse conditions they face daily. Let Mr. Okoro's death not be in vain," General Manager Roy Spooner continued. "It is an opportunity to highlight the risk faced and sacrifices made by the drivers and the lack of respect and recognition they receive. I agree with Mr. Ruiz. Drivers do not want to pass up passengers. Their actions are mostly defensive based on past experiences, known danger, and well-founded fears." That again from Roy Spooner. Mr. Spooner referenced comments Evelyn Ruiz made last week here on the Taxi Link, where she said, "Drivers are not biased. They are not racist. When they see a passenger, they pick them up. However, there are some times that their gut says this is not a good fare. It's not a legitimate fare.
Drivers pick up complete strangers at all times. They are just hoping and praying that all fares that they pick up are legitimate passengers. They go out on the street to make money. These drivers do not discriminate. They are not biased. They are not racist. When they see a passenger, they pick up. However, there are some times that their guts says that this is not a good fare. It's not a legitimate fare."
That was Classic Cab owner Evelyn Ruiz speaking last week here on the Taxi Link. We finished headlines in New York City, where drivers protested outside City Hall this week.
What no? What no? What no? What no? What no?
The pro- protest comes as the Taxi and Limousine Commission is set to vote June 20th on new rules that will take away the hard-earned raises drivers finally won after 8 long years, according to a press release from the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. The Taxi Link's Will Martin attended the protest and interviewed Bhairavi Desai, leader of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance and the AFL-CIO chartered National Taxi Workers Alliance, and we'll play that interview later in the program. This is the Taxi Link, brought to you by the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers. You can catch the Taxi Link each Saturday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on WST 1120 AM. And you can find all the past shows online at thefightback.org. I'm Pete Tucker with The Fight Back, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tony Norman, chairman of DC Advisory Neighborhood Commission 1B, which includes parts of U Street, 9th Street, and Georgia Avenue. Welcome, Tony Norman.
Glad to be here.
We're also joined in studio by an attorney, organizer, and driver advocate. Aurora Vasquez has played an integral part in several of the region's most successful driver efforts over the past decade, including in Alexandria and Prince George's County. Welcome, Aurora.
Thank you. Glad to be here as well.
I want to let listeners know that in addition to getting a history from Aurora on some of the region's struggles from Prince George's to Alexandria, we're also going to be opening up the phone lines, and I'll give that number out shortly. We want to hear from drivers and whoever else wants to weigh in. But before we turn to Aurora, I want to, Tony Norman, get your opening thoughts that you'd care to share and follow up on one or two DC issues that we've been following over the past couple of weeks, but any opening thoughts you care to share.
Other than the evolving situation out in PG County, which I think all cab drivers in Washington, D.C. and Virginia should take notice of, it's a issue that not just local to the PG area, it's local to it's an issue that affects all cab drivers and how they're treated. So I think all cab drivers and the public need to pay attention to how that situation is resolved and how those drivers are respected.
And we're going to be discussing that in some detail. I wanted to touch base, Tony, a couple issues in D.C. One is the Office of Administrative Hearings. This is a case we've been following with Ephraim Achete. Apparently, he has not received a ruling, so he remains suspended. These are him as well as Sharanjit Singh, two drivers who were suspended despite the fact that the criminal charges against them were dropped. The Taxi Cab Commission maintained that they should be suspended indefinitely. Mr. Singh has been, his license has been returned, but he was fined, I think, $1,500. Mr. Achete's remains suspended, but this case before the Office of Administrative Hearings remains open. He remains suspended, but like Mr. Singh, the criminal charges against him dropped.
I think it's interesting. The case where they did issue a ruling, the administrative judge was very concerned of how the Taxicab Commission just summarily, as soon as a charge was filed or an allegation made against a cab driver, they immediately suspended their license indefinitely, without establishing a valid standard of how they're going to suspend this license. And they didn't even consult with the driver himself to give him an opportunity to respond to the allegations made against him. They just automatically called the police station, got the complaint, and then indefinitely suspended this driver. I think the administrative judge had some very deep concerns about that the Taxicab Commission, with no valid standards, just immediately suspend a license. And I think that's why they lifted the suspension on the driver on the first case. I think they fined him, but they were concerned about this immediate suspension, which is basically a due process issue. You're taking away a person's livelihood without even an opportunity to hear from that person or that person to defend himself. I think this is the mentality and the problem of the Taxicab Commission And the chairman, Ron Linton. They seem to think that when they suspend a driver indefinitely, that this is a technical violation like points on your driver's license or an administrative process. When you suspend a driver, you're taking away his ability to pay his bills, to feed his family. This is a serious due process issue. You cannot just arbitrarily suspend indefinitely or even suspend for a certain time period without valid grounds, valid substance, and a rational basis for coming to that determination. I think that's what the administrative judge lectured, really, the Taxicab Commission on.
And we'll see how that ruling plays out. And if there are other drivers who are going through this process, please get in touch with us. You can get my contact information at thefightback.org. We want to follow these cases, the specifics of them. I got an email from a DC cab driver, All Saints McCauley. He emailed to let me know he's created a petition at change.org to exempt drivers from the seatbelt law. Drivers already exempted from having to wear seatbelts between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. when they have a fare, according to the petitioners who write, quote, The incident that brought about the exemption was the stabbing of a cab driver at 4 p.m. Wouldn't it be sensible for the seatbelt law to read, cab drivers are exempt from the seatbelt requirements at all times when they have passengers? Again, this is from a D.C. cab driver, and we're going to link to the petition at thefightback.org. One more issue on D.C., Tony Norman, and that is the FTC. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the Federal Trade Commission, kind of an unlikely source of concerns about the Taxi Cab Commission, but they have some concerns with the recent amendments that the Taxi Commission made regarding smartphone applications and sedan class vehicles. And there's going to be a special meeting, the Taxi Cab Commission, coming up June 25th, I believe, and we'll also link to that information at thefightback.org.
Yeah, I think the Federal Trade Commission had raised some concerns that even the drivers themselves raised doing some of the hearings on this. I know that even though Uber, I understand, initiated maybe some of the charges, but even though they did it for their own self-interest, the FTC raised some very legitimate issues in terms of the restrictions that these regulations have on competition with drivers and application companies. And once again, it raises the issue of the Taxicab Commission trying to set up monopolies in terms of various different industries and restricting a particular industry. And the FTC raised issues about that. Another issue that the FTC, that the drivers have protested about them collecting this data, although the drivers objected on constitutional, personal grounds, the FTC had reservations and objections on the grounds of competition, that if you gather this data and you publish it, you put some of the cab drivers and either other companies at a great disadvantage to other companies that will use this data against that particular company or companies competing against cab drivers. So I think they're questioning that aspect of the rule of collecting this data and what are you going to do with it and the safety of the data that you collect. How can you guarantee the safety? Once again, the Federal Trade Commission is pointing out the arbitrary nature and the how quick Ron Linton and the Taxicab Commission are trying to rush these things through without proper vetting, without proper legal vetting, without respect to competition, due process, and other issues. So the Federal Trade Commission, I think we need to spend a little more time on, and I think they have the authority to even strike down some of these provisions. So they sent a quiet warning to the Taxicab Commission that you need to revisit some of these regulations.
That's the voice of Tony Norman, co-host of The Taxi Link. And I wanted to now turn to Aurora Vasquez, a attorney, organizer, and driver advocate. And I want to begin, Aurora, in Prince George's County. And at National Harbor, there's a situation going on with drivers being feeling that they're being pushed out to make way for Veolia, French transportation company, who's got sedans and is now bringing on hybrid vehicles at a more affordable price, although they thought they'd be on already. But the response we got from Gaylord National was that in June they would be expanding their service. It hadn't quite happened yet. But I wanted you to really take us back. You've been at this for a minute. You've worked with the drivers to create the Prince George's Taxi Workers Alliance, really strengthen that organization, and were there when National Harbor was created. In that fight to make sure the drivers were represented there. But really, take a moment and take us back and welcome. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's always good to be with folks who care about cab drivers and to have an opportunity to talk about the importance of combined efforts to improve cab drivers' working conditions. Now, the background on Prince George's County alone, the Prince George's County Taxi Workers Alliance kind of formed in earnest in 2007. So that whole concept in Prince George's County of drivers coming together to really take control of their industry and to make very clear that the industry, first and foremost, belongs to cab drivers. Because as we all know, without taxi cab drivers, there is no service. So I think it's very ironic when regulators talk about concerns over quality of service, and then they mistreat the very body of workers who provide the service. There's a real disconnect there and a real irony. And what happens, and it's what happened in National Harbor, is that a particular culture toward cab drivers emerges. And so what's important about changing National Harbor at this time is to really be able to change that culture and to prevent the unfavorable treatment of cab drivers from being able to institutionalize itself any further. from my perspective, what we see at National Harbor is really just a smaller example of the broader perception of cab drivers, often by regulators. Not all regulators. Sometimes some folks get it, but oftentimes working conditions for cab drivers isn't at the top of their list or at the top of their to-do list of social justice issues. And for folks like myself and the cab drivers I work with, we talk about the struggle as an economic justice issue, because at its heart and at its core, that's what it is. It's an economic justice issue. It's about cab drivers' right to seek and obtain economic opportunity without any unnecessary barriers. So National Harbor, for instance, when it first opened its doors, the Prince George's County Taxi Workers Alliance got its hands on a document that National Harbor was putting out that was setting out the regulations for any cab driver who was going to provide service at the harbor. And it had ridiculous things about how many times or how often cab drivers needed to wash their cabs and what they needed to wear and things of that nature. And we already have a body of law that speaks to all of those things, to the standards that drivers have to comply with. And then they also created, as they thought, the right thing to do, a queuing section for cab drivers, which was off to the side, completely out of sight. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that for cab drivers, visibility is central. So at that time, the Prince George's County Taxi Workers Alliance and myself, we opposed that location of that taxi stand. We opposed those rules and we shut down those rules altogether. We met with Peterson Company, who owns National Harbor. And they explained to us, for instance, from their perspective, that they had tried to reach out to cab companies and just didn't know who to reach out to, who to call, because they know nothing about the taxi cab industry. So they kind of went into it on their own, and they admitted that. So they said, okay, right, maybe we didn't make the best choices. However, the reaction from Gaylord Hotel from day one has been that they are trying to maintain a very particular public image, and that that image is kind of shiny and polished and kind of intimates high income levels, and that they want their transportation to be in line with that. So unlike Peterson Company, who I'm not trying to suggest is fully friends of cab drivers, they were more reasonable and more open to the idea that perhaps there could have been a better way to do things. Gaylord hasn't been that way, not so much. Although the original owners of Gaylord back in 2007, now it's owned by Marriott, they weren't the original folks in there, did in fact meet several times with the Alliance, and we negotiated some improvements. For instance, they had agreed to create written materials that would say very clearly what it costs to take a cab from point A to point B and make those readily available at the door for folks as they were walking out into the driveway. And they agreed to train their doormen and the folks up front to stop directing people just to sedans, that they would clearly tell them there were taxis and sedans available. And we used to send folks, before the doorman figured out who I was, I used to go out there and sit on those front things and just take notes about who was saying what and what phrases were being used. And we gathered that data and presented it to Gaylord management to say, yes, there's been an improvement, or no, or one particular person is a problem. They still continue to do this. So there was some improvements. And from at that point, drivers were queuing not in the parking lot where they are now, but on the street in front of that parking lot. There are now meters there, and it's kind of one of those, it looks like it could be a stand. They were queuing in that space. And then somewhere down the road,
which is out in the open, it's not maybe right. Not perfect, but at least there is some visibility.
That's right. You could see them from the doors of the Gaylord. You could see them across the driveway and over that grass space. You could clearly see that there were taxis queued right there.
Where now you cannot see them. They are on the third floor of a parking garage. They are out of view.
That's right. Completely out of view. And so they got moved out of that space, not by the Gaylord and not by Peterson Companies, but rather by Prince George's County's transportation folks who wanted to make money off of those meters that were parked there. So then you end up with several different players in place focusing on National Harbor because of what National Harbor represents. And then the Gaylord ends up being like the primary focus. But the issue at National Harbor is much bigger than the Gaylord Hotel. It's really a problem of how that harbor has been designed and whether the design of any building, business, anything that's coming to National Harbor takes cab drivers into consideration. So what I would like to see cab drivers do is to focus on the Gaylord, but also think about the bigger picture and think about how we can institutionalize visibility for cab drivers at National Harbor. And that will necessarily mean cab drivers inserting themselves into processes like the casino that will be coming. They haven't yet broken ground, but they will.
MGM Casino, a major effort. As people look at, I was shocked to visit National Harbor. You have, by the harbor is the hotels, six of them, restaurants, condominiums. And then now as you go up the hill, you're having a mall that's coming online this December and a scheduled MGM casino in 2016.
That's right.
These are major, it's already a major endeavor that it is as we speak, and it's scheduled to get a lot bigger.
Right. And so I see that as an opportunity for cab drivers to insert themselves deep into those processes where cab drivers don't normally have a seat at the table. So, you know, communications with MGM folks to make sure MGM designs its building, its property, its structure with space for cab drivers to queue on their driveway so that we don't replicate the Gaylord Hotel, right? Different opportunities, stands in other portions of National Harbor itself. National Harbor has public streets, Prince George's County public streets. Cab drivers by law have a right to be on every Prince George's County public street. So it makes sense that we demand that there be taxi stands there so drivers can queue in different parts of the harbor. So what's all of that to say that what's happening at National Harbor today is not new, sadly. The harbor has never done a good job of creating a space for cab drivers to provide that very necessary service. So this goes back to, you know, when it first opened. And like I said, there were some gains from the Prince George's County Taxi Workers Alliance. And I think it's still doable. I think there's still time to be able to change that culture at National Harbor.
You mentioned I want to talk about the public investment that made National Harbor possible. But before that, I want to let drivers know we're going to be taking calls. So if you want to call in, please do so. I'll give out the number twice right now, and we'll give it out again as we go along. But that number to call here to the Taxi Link broadcasting on WST 1120 AM, that number is 703-534-9878, 703-534-9878. Please call in. We want to hear from you. I'm Pete Tucker, joined by my co-host Tony Norman, and we're joined in studio by Aurora Vasquez. Aurora, I wanted you to talk about the public investment that National Harbor is a private entity, but it likely could not have been built but for huge hundreds of millions in public investment in the roads and the other infrastructure that made it possible.
Right. National Harbor is what we refer to as a public-private space, meaning there are portions of it that are absolutely public, the public streets that belong to Prince George's County that run through the harbor. However, not every street in National Harbor is a public street. Some of them are, in fact, private. So it's interesting enough, the same owners, like downtown Silver Spring, a public-private space that has very clear features of what we normally recognize as public spaces, like sidewalks, but then there are also private homes and other private issues.
Also owned by Peterson.
Yes, that's right. Peterson Company owns both of those entities and has struggled in both places with like what it means to have public access and give public access, right? So I'm not surprised that they weren't thinking, how do we build taxi cab access into National Harbor when the whole concept of it came up. But it's our position, and we've never gotten any pushback from anybody, not Peterson, not the county, that cab drivers don't have an absolute right to be in the harbor. The question becomes how that looks. Right. Where they are, whether they're cruising, whether they have a stand and how that impacts the business that takes place at the harbor. So I think we and cab drivers should not forget that there's an absolute clear right for them to be there. And it's in our best interest and in cab drivers' best interest to really figure out how that presence is going to look.
Tony Norman.
I just wanted to add to say that I think she brought up a good point that they have a right to be there, but that right is being infringed when you look at the way the parking garage and the owner of the hotels are treating them and getting the security people and doubling the prices in the parking. They can't be able to afford to be in the parking garage. They can't afford, and they can't just roam around driving on the public streets. So that's essentially taking away that right for them to be there. So that's a substantive fact that's the effect of what they're doing out there at the National Harbor.
Agreed. And I think there are some ways to get at that, because The irony of them making it difficult for drivers, say, to maintain a space in that parking lot or for them to be in other places is that they will, in fact, push drivers onto the public streets that are within the harbor. And drivers have an absolute right to be there. And so it doesn't matter how angry police get because they're there. It doesn't matter if the Gaylord calls the police and says, hey, we need you to ticket drivers and make life difficult for them so they won't be here. Their absolute right to be there does not dissipate. So the question for drivers becomes, how do they come together to formulate a strategy to, say, take that little piece of power away from, say, the Gaylord Hotel, who might not want to see a stream of cabs clogging up that street in front of their hotel, right? My guess is they would call the cops and say, hey, come and do something about it. So there would have to be a strategy about how you shift that power so that police officers who patrol the harbor realize that we know what they're supposed to be doing, and it's their job to patrol, but also to ensure that cab drivers can access those streets, right? And so there's a whole strategy around that. And I won't go into the details now of what that strategy would look like, but that's part of what I do. I sit down with cab drivers and I build out those ground level strategies where cab drivers can be in the lead. And so we can certainly change that power dynamic and to make sure we send a clear signal to police officers that they need to behave, so to speak, for lack of a better descriptor of what they're doing out there. And it could involve all kinds of things, data collection, data analysis of how many people they're ticketing there and for what, and whether it's disproportionate to other parts of Prince George's County and things of that nature. Because if police officers are overstepping their authority in National Harbor, as cab drivers report they are, then they've left a mighty beautiful and clear footprint of what they've been doing. And we can use all of that in our favor.
And those police officers are Prince George's County police officers.
That's right.
And you also, one other small point I wanted to see if you wanted to respond to before we move on to the whole county. I know this is just one part of the county, and that is drivers have the right to be on the streets, but practically speaking, I don't know how feasible it is for a driver to keep driving around and burn up the gas. It makes it prohibitive, just like paying the parking meters constantly is prohibitive to actually be there.
Yeah, and I agree, and I don't think, you know, that's what drivers want to do. I don't think they want to be driving the public streets of Prince George's County located within National Harbor. I think they would rather be queued somewhere and waiting for a fare. However, if it becomes the case that they're being displaced from any reasonable place they might be able to queue, then the people displacing them are going to literally push drivers onto those streets. And right now they may think, or the folks who are making it difficult for drivers to be in National Harbor may not be very concerned because they see the regulars at National Harbor, which is a contingent of maybe 100 drivers on a regular basis, and it might get larger when there's a large checkout at Gaylord National. However, there is 1,044 licensed cabs in Prince George's County. At a minimum, 300 of those are independents that came out of the Prince George's County Taxi Workers Alliance effort, right? In addition to those, you have the renters who are also allied with the alliance. So it is possible that if they continue to make it difficult for drivers, that spilling cab drivers onto those streets is not going to be the 40 or 50 drivers who are in front of the Gaylord on Friday, but it's going to be several hundreds of drivers who just happen to converge on the public streets in National Harbor. And I don't think the Gaylord or Peterson Company or anybody wants that. However, if that's the only option they leave us, then that may be what has to be done sometime down the road.
We're speaking with Aurora Vasquez. This is the Taxi Link. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 703-534-9878. Aurora, I said I wanted to move to the rest of the county, but there's one more question I wanted to ask, which is about Veolia and how much of a threat you think this is to drivers. This is a French multinational corporation, which Gaylord has signed a contract with that looks to be expanding to these hybrid cars apparently this month and may have a wider role at National Harbor. I'm not sure. But how much of a threat do you think Veolia is?
Well, I think it's unclear. I think if drivers are not strategic about their pushback on this company, I think the company is going to be able to fill this very particular niche, which is the fact that as much as the Gaylord National has said that their customers want this high-end transportation service, apparently that's not so true, right? Because in the beginning, they were saying, oh, the sedans are there because that's what our customers want. They want these high-priced, fancy sedans. Well, apparently, they were mistaken because now they're saying, oh, they want this middle option, a lower-priced option. So to me, that's an in. To me, that's an in for cab drivers, right? Because cab drivers are that more reasonable option. So I think if Viola brings in that middle-tier hybrid, I don't think it's the end-all, be-all for cab drivers. I think the focusing on what matters to the Gaylord, which is their public image, what the people who either go there for conferences or go there because they're staying in the hotel see and know about the Gaylord, I also think that's a big in for drivers. So I agree with drivers when they say their goal of raising visibility for themselves will be easier if the Viola middle-tier hybrids are not there. And I agree with that 100%. But I don't think it's the end-all, be-all if they come in. I think, in fact, if they come in, then we just use all the things the Gaylord has said to spin it and really show that the Gaylord has been dishonest. Because, like I said, their first line of defense was, our folks want the expensive sedans. And now they're like, oh no, they want a middle, you know, option. And we can use that, you know, to formulate a strategy and messaging and a pushback on them to carve out that space for drivers once again. I think it's a story that would be very sympathetic to the public.
It's kind of this weird thing that hadn't been seen before where these are just for Gaylord and then maybe expanded for National Harbor. These aren't not public vehicles for hire. They can't pick up and drop off everywhere.
That's right.
So I guess this is kind of a new field of cheaper sedans, I guess.
That's right. And that's exactly what they are. They are, you know, sedan sub a more affordable, you know, thing. And it's also, they're also playing to the fact that the people, the public, the nation is kind of moving towards this, you know, green vehicle, green, you know, country, green everything, right? So you bring in hybrids and, you know, people think, oh, well, that makes sense. And that's good. But the public doesn't realize or doesn't know that at Gaylord National in particular, those hybrids are being brought in to offer them a service, sure, but also they're displacing this whole community of low-income workers who have been there for years. And I firmly believe that if the public knew that even with those hybrids sitting in front of them, they would do the right thing and pick the taxi. But taxi cab drivers also have to think about how they're going to insert themselves into this greening of vehicles. If you look at Arlington County, for instance, they've got a lot of hybrids. That's really very much the norm there because the county, by law, is moving the industry toward that. And I think drivers should take that into consideration. And to the extent that there's an open space for Viola to come in and put middle-priced hybrids in, you know, there's that empty space, drivers could occupy that space as well, right? If there were more drivers with hybrids, they could, then what would Viola say? Then what would Gaylord National say, right? To the, our customers want this middle-tiered green option, right? If drivers could put that on the table themselves.
Tony Norman?
Only thing I can add to that is that when these type of issues come up, I don't know if there's any institutional structure that the taxi cab drivers have in PG County, and not just to activate when these issues come up and then go inactive until another issue comes up, that there must be some structure that will put pressure on the public officials. I don't know if any public officials have gotten involved in this to keep it on a more stable basis and it'll give more leverage to the drivers. I don't know if they're working on that or have something like that in place.
And that brings me to the question I wanted to ask, which is Oro Vasquez, talk about the history, the fight, the Prince George's County Taxi Workers Alliance that you were an instrumental part of. And it was really, I was in the chambers as one of the final votes took place to switch power away from some of the handful of owners, maybe handful is too generous. It's really just a few people who dominate the industry and switch a lot of that towards drivers. And to see drivers just explode, a chamber full of people, some tears, cheers, it was really an amazing moment. But talk about that struggle.
It was. So I was incredibly, incredibly honored to have been a part of it. And incredibly blessed that drivers invited me to be a part of that and that I was able to be value added to it. There's nothing like being with a group of, you know, several hundred drivers. You know, the Alliance could mobilize easily 300, 400 drivers during those years and really hearing them talk about being committed to, changing their working conditions and to being in the lead. And for someone like myself, who, while I'm an attorney, I don't lawyer in the traditional normal way, in the sense that I don't, my interactions with drivers are not a client-attorney relationship. I come in really in the background, providing the technical assistance and doing everything I can to strengthen drivers' ability to take back the industry. So what you saw there at the end was the end of a three-year struggle where drivers really risked everything. They risked being fired. They risked the harassment and the humiliation they got when they went to the company to pay their weekly stand dues, which were $330 a week. And they were berated by cab company owners, cab company staff, ridiculed. One of the owners in particular used to go out to the metro stands and tell me in what other industry you know where the owner of a business that makes millions of dollars a year off its workers comes out to see the people on the ground to make them feel bad about what they're doing. But one of the owners would do that. He would literally go out to the metro stands to ridicule drivers for participating in this effort. And he would tell them things like that. His favorite line was, you are not going to get so much as one PG. In Prince George's County, the certificate, the medallion, is referred to as a PG. Literally, go around metro stations taunting drivers. You won't get so much as one PG. And in the end, drivers got 300. So it was really amazing. And the whole hope of the alliance was that the leadership team that led that three-year struggle would then be in a position to be able to do some driver-to-driver teaching and trading off of knowledge to junior drivers who came in as those senior drivers took on their individual medallions. So that was the whole plan from the beginning. But, you know, somewhere in between there, that didn't play out as well as we would have liked. It is, however, still the plan and the intention. So the alliance did not dissolve wholly. It has still been moving along, but not quite as energetic and impactful as we had originally envisioned when we designed it out starting in 2007. That's when we kind of did the master plan for the alliance. So, it's not always perfect. And I always tell drivers it's not about being perfect. It's not, for instance, about having every single driver behind you, but it is about doing the best and maximizing the skills and the ability and the leadership of the drivers who are willing to step up to the plate.
That's the voice of Aurora Vasquez. This is the Taxi Link. I'd like to welcome Jonathan to the conversation, who's called in. Jonathan, welcome.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Jonathan Hiley, and I'm a taxi driver from Alexandria, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Also a student in college, and I wanted to comment how what we see day by day that, especially in Alexandria, Arlington, they're going towards all the decisions that city councils are making are in the favor of the taxi companies, and not actually the drivers. And as you see about the credit card issue that's taking place right now in Alexandria, how they want us to accept credit cards only through the company's credit card machine. And we just want to see how we can strengthen the alliance, and if you can contribute some money towards getting a union or something that will fight for our rights and maybe go towards a free transfer for drivers and all.
Well, thank you so much for the call, and if others want to call in, 703-534-9878. Aurora Vasquez, talk about Alexandria. Mm-hmm. I know you've done work in Arlington, too. The credit card issue is a big one. There are a number of issues. This is playing out in D.C. as well, and we're talking about the Federal Trade Commission has some concerns with what's taking place in D.C. But talk about the situation in Alexandria and Arlington. Not just the credit card issue, but also driver's ability. This seems pretty fundamental, to be able to leave the company for which they work. Even if they own their own cab, drivers cannot necessarily leave the company. I think, what is it, a two-year window that has to pass before they can even leave?
Yeah, in Alexandria. So Alexandria is my first experience, my first love in taxi cab industry reform. I first started working with cab drivers in Alexandria back in 2003 in partnership with John Liss, who's an amazing organizer over at Tenants and Workers United there in Alexandria, which is a grassroots organization with now at this point about 25 years history of organizing low-income folks in that area. And at that time, in that struggle originally with the group we refer to them as AUTO, which was the Alexandria United Taxi Cab Operators Organization, was the first, actually the first cab driver led initiative in the region, and Prince George's County actually came out of that. They wanted to replicate what the Alexandria drivers had done. And at that time, we did something very novel in Alexandria. We literally redesigned the entire industry. We did comprehensive changes to the taxi cab code. We wrote in due process, which was, we got calls from all over the country of lawyers and other cab drivers saying, how in the world did you literally get due process language into that law? So Alexandria drivers should not be experiencing like what the DC drivers experienced with the, having their license suspended without there being a firm, you know, kind of resolution as to the underlying alleged offense. And we created a system, which is in many ways a medallion, but we didn't call it a medallion. I created what is a vehicle permit, which is an instrument that makes a car a taxi in and of itself. So, and with that, we created the opportunity for a cab driver to take that instrument, their cab and themselves, to any cab company they wanted to affiliate with. We got a lot of pushback on that last part. And what ended up happening is that we agreed to collectively for negotiations to a controlled, is what the city kept using, a controlled movement period. Their concern was that there was going to be utter chaos, which we absolutely disagreed with. But they kept saying that if cab drivers could freely select the company they affiliated with, there would be utter chaos because cab drivers would be changing companies, you know, every other day. We opposed that. We said, that's ridiculous. There's costs with changing cab companies. Cab drivers have to paint their car. You know, there's things associated with it. So it's not going to happen. But they kept saying, oh, you know, we don't want to test it. We don't want to be the testing ground for that, because then the senior citizens and the people who need to get dialysis are going to be the guinea pigs and people are going to die because we're trying to test this new system. So we said, fine, we agreed to an annual movement period, which meant that in a very controlled fashion, every 12 months, cab drivers could change the company they affiliated with. And when that first happened in the first round, Union Cab, which is the cab driver owned cooperatively held cab company, became the second largest cab company overnight, practically, because of that movement period. And I should say that our whole goal in taking on the Alexandria taxicab industry back then was to create the space for the emergence of driver-owned cab companies. Because at the end of the day, it's my opinion, and often the times of the people I work with, that cab companies are good and fine in an industry because they help coordinate the distribution or the movement of cabs. However, they are not essential to the industry, meaning if all cab companies disappeared tomorrow, cab drivers would still be able to do an amazing job of distributing themselves to where they're needed, because cab drivers know where the people, where the rides, where the fares, where the needs are. So even without a company, whatever you want to call the company, drivers could still, and I believe would still, be able to do an amazing job. So that was part of why we did that. So after that victory in Alexandria, which I should say again was a perfect victory, similar to Prince George's County, in that when the legislation I drafted in partnership with cab drivers went forward, everybody on the city council in Alexandria voted in favor of that legislation. Hmm. The same thing happened in Prince George's County. That nine-member board, when that legislation I drafted in partnership with cab drivers went forward, it got unanimous support. In fact, in Prince George's County, we got unanimous support. The county executive then, Jack Johnson, and we all know he is now in another place, waited till the county board went on vacation, and then he vetoed that bill. But then through outreach from the drivers and our allies on the board, folks came back from vacation to vote again, and they overrode the veto. So all of that to say that with some real commitment and some real planning, cab drivers have done amazing work. But back to Alexandria. So the victory came in 2005, and then drivers from that leadership team and who were involved in that struggle began to focus on Union Cab, and rightly so, and took their eyes off of the law. So then over the years, not right away, but kind of a few years down the road, there started to be like small changes to the law, like a sentence here, a sentence there, which now when you put them all together, the law is again really bad. And it includes, instead of an annual movement period, a 12-month movement period, it now includes a 24-month movement period, meaning you're locked into your current cab company for 24 months before you are given the option of picking a different company. But then they also wrote in other language that actually makes it hard, if not impossible, for other companies in particular small cab companies, to be able to receive drivers who want to move to them during the 24-month movement period. So they put some barriers in for those companies. So what the city likes to say is, or the regulators, because the city council doesn't say this, but the folks in the transportation department do, they say, oh, no, cab drivers can move, and they can freely pick the company they want to go to. What they won't tell you is that they have made it impossible for the company that gets picked to actually bring those cab drivers on.
Hmm. We're speaking with Aurora Vasquez. This is the Taxi Link. A couple announcements, and Tony Norman, I want to get your thoughts. One is that the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers, which sponsors this show, has a phone conference which takes place each Saturday at 8:30, so shortly after this show. It takes place in Amharic, for those drivers who speak Amharic. It is a must listen to, and to call in to take part, I'm going to give the number out twice. That number is 712-432-3100, and the code is 140465. Again, that's 712-432-3100. The code is 140465. And again, I want to let folks know, whether you're in Alexandria, in Arlington, in Prince George's County, in D.C., you know, join the organizations that strengthen cab drivers. This show is made possible by the Small Business Association of D.C. Taxi Cab Drivers. So I encourage drivers to become a member of that organization. I also want to let drivers know that Tony Norman and I will be headed after the show down to our favorite spot. I think it's called the Mediterranean spot at 15th and U Streets Northwest. We'll be there probably 9 to 11 or so if anyone wants to come and touch base in person. That is where we'll be. It's Caddy Corner across from the gas station at 15th and U, which I know a lot of DC drivers frequent. Tony Norman.
Other than to add to the situation that I stated earlier, that this is not just an issue unique to the PG driver situation, although the specific facts are unique. I think all drivers, just like the driver that called in from Virginia and Washington, need to support drivers when these issues come up. That's the only way we're going to put an end to this in these various jurisdictions and these outrageous regulations and actions on the part of companies and regulators against taxicab drivers. All drivers must take an issue in what's happening in PG.
I had two other things I wanted to follow up with Aurora Vasquez. That is Jonathan, who called in. He mentioned credit cards, and I kind of added to it, and we didn't get to that. So if you could talk about credit cards in Alexandria, and then I also want to ask about a report that you did in Prince George's County in 2007-2008, Dispatching Injustice. But let's start with credit cards in Alexandria.
Sure. I think credit cards is the, at least for the region, right? The conversation around credit cards and cab drivers accepting credit cards and how that's going to look in implementation is one of the primary industry changes facing all cab drivers. So it's not just DC. It's not just Alexandria. In Arlington last year, I also work with cab drivers in Arlington or partner with cab drivers in Arlington County. And they're also called Auto, which Arlington County United Taxi Cab Drivers Organization. And they also work in partnership with John Liss and Tenants and Workers United. But last year we defeated an effort to institutionalize credit cards, not because cab drivers were opposed to credit card acceptance per se, but because they were opposed to the way it was going to be institutionalized. Because the way it was going to be institutionalized would give cab company owners an opportunity to use the credit card system as a way to siphon yet more of cab drivers' earnings from them. We know that in these jurisdictions, cab drivers already pay a weekly rental fee in Alexandria, Arlington, sometimes referred to as a stand due. So that's one way cab companies divert driver earnings to themselves. And then when they are given the power to control credit card acceptance and processing, they then use that as cover to pass on processing fees, administrative fees, equipment fees. And one cab driver in Alexandria, Daniel, his name is Daniel, he's one of our leaders there, says very clearly, this is what happens. And it's absolutely right. Cab drivers get charged for the equipment, the credit card processing equipment, and they have to pay a weekly fee. It gets folded into their weekly fee. So the company pays a fixed price for that taxi cab, for the credit card processing equipment, but cab drivers end up paying for that equipment forever into infinity because it gets folded into their weekly fees. So it's not like cab companies are saying, oh, it cost me, $500,000 for the equipment, and once we're done paying for it, we're done. No, they just fold $20 into the weekly fee, and then they charge all their drivers that amount forever and ever and ever. Amen. So they use it as a money maker. So in Arlington, the county board agreed with drivers that it was a dangerous process to go forward in that way. In Alexandria, very recently, cab drivers did an excellent job of really opening up that conversation and delaying what could have been a very quick and sudden implementation of credit card acceptance. In Alexandria, cab drivers are also not opposed to accepting credit cards. In fact, they recognize that it's the latest development in industry service, and they're willing to do it. But they also have some legitimate concerns over who gets to pick the credit card machine. For the same reasons, because there's already one company, and that's Yellow Cab, that has chosen a credit card processing machine that does far more than needs to be done. It's that machine that has commercials and does all the fancy stuff. But the reality is that in order to give the customer the option of paying with a credit card, you don't need all those bells and whistles. If that company really cared and didn't see credit card processing as a money-making venture, it would not have invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in a fancy machine. It would have gotten the basic, the most basic machine to meet the rider's needs of swiping a credit card. So they, you know, they did a good job of opening up that conversation. And in the end, the city council very recently decided that they would go forward with making credit card acceptance mandatory, and that they would allow the cab companies to set the policy for how that would look. And that's broad language. So it means that a company could say, our policy is that we're going to let cab drivers choose their machine, right? That's possible. I don't know how many companies will do that, but it is a possibility. And then it's going to be monitored for a certain amount of time to see how it works, so to speak. So we are of the position that it's not at all clear that cab companies have the legal right to demand that independent contractors use a particular type of equipment. So for us, that's still an unsettled question. So, you know, we're hoping in Alexandria, for instance, that we can bring in allies like AFL-CIO or anyone else who's interested and has lawyer resources that can research issues like that for us, these very narrow issues to say whether, in fact, it's okay for a cab company to obligate its independent contractors to use a particular piece of equipment. Because as an independent contractor, one of the features of independent contractors is that they bring the tools of the trade to the business. And our position is if credit card acceptance is going to be mandatory, then the credit card processing machine is a tool of the trade. An independent contractor should get to pick the tool that they bring.
Aurora Vasquez, let's switch from Alexandria back to Prince George's County, and let's go back a few years to a report you did, Dispatching Injustice. Go ahead and describe its impact, what it was, and I want to get your final thoughts.
So Dispatching Injustice was a very strategic part of the overall effort to create independent medallions or add more individual medallions so that cab drivers could own them individually. And it was a report that came out of a lot of data and research that I combed through, and it really exposed, as we like to say, the dark underbelly of the industry. So, for instance, it exposed the fact that there were about four primary cab companies operating on the streets of Prince George's County, but on paper it looked like there were some 17 of them, and 13 of those 17 at least were all owned by the same person, and 3/4 of those companies had their operating certificate with the state of Maryland had been revoked some, you know, 5 years ago, some 10 years ago. So there was all this question about whether that person should have still been owning those certificates, and he owned them under the names of companies that technically no longer had a legal existence. So he was using the certificates issued to that company. He would rent them to Company B, and then Company B would rent them out to cab drivers. So it was this whole very complicated thing. But you could only put that picture together looking through multiple layers of documents. And so we condensed all of that in there. We talked very frankly about the fact that cab drivers in Prince George's County paid $330 a week to rent a cab. On average, they earned $32,000 a year. So the companies were siphoning for themselves upwards of $17,000 a year from each of their drivers. There were three men who controlled more than 700 of the 765 cabs at that time. And they were making a nest somewhere between, you know, $9 and $12 million a year.
Is that right?
Off of diverting. If you know, $17,000 times 700, and they had like 740 cabs, something like that. It was a lot of money. So that's what drivers were up against, like folks who are accustomed to just making very easy, free millions of dollars a year. And so we use that report to go to the public and to go to the county board and even to Jack Johnson, who, by the way, one of the company owners used to tell us, you know, you guys will never get anything because I play golf with Jack.
County exec of Prince George's County.
That's right. That's right. And we know that at the end of our struggle is when his dilemma with, you know, with the investigations with the FBI and everything came out. And so we use that to say to folks, look, now you know what's happening, right? Now you can't put your head in the sand or say, oh, you didn't know. Now you know. So pick a side. You're either going to protect the status quo, and it's what we put in this report, or you're going to stand up and do the right thing and help us change things. We didn't give people a middle option. We were very clear and said, either you are going to be with us or you'll be against us. If you're against us, it means you're protecting the status quo that's in this report. And at the root, you are anti-low-income worker and you are anti-immigrant, because the majority of these drivers are, in fact, immigrant drivers. And folks got really concerned with us characterizing the situation that way. But it was absolutely what it was. It is a low-income, at least in Prince George's County, low-income worker immigrant justice issue. And when we started talking about it that way, county board members really came on board and said, okay, we don't want to be the ones who cause harm to this particular community of drivers.
Any final thoughts you care to share, Aurora?
Well, I think in this region in particular, cab drivers are doing the right thing to the extent that they are saying, you know, the industry belongs to us and we have a right to set the direction it takes. I think cab drivers should also be very, very careful to not to let other people who are not cab drivers come in and absolutely dictate how things go. I'm a firm believer in, I will come to the table if cab drivers invite me. I help them co-design very sophisticated multi-level strategies. And I really feel like that's the right thing to do, and that each jurisdiction is entitled to tailor its own goal and its own strategy. In other words, there's not kind of like a one size fits all. So what works in one place in New York or in Pennsylvania or in Prince George's County or Alexandria may not work in D.C. or Montgomery County or Fairfax or any of the other places I've gotten phone calls from, because I get calls from all over the country, really, to come in and partner with cab drivers to design these strategies.
The medallion bill that you're really pushing for PGs or medallions in Prince George's County, but it would have, the medallion bill that came in D.C. would have wiped out most drivers. It speaks to your point. That's jurisdictions right. Are different. The issues are different. There's similarities.
That's right.
But there are also differences.
Yeah. And it's important that whoever wants to come in and quote unquote help drivers, that they be mindful and respectful of that. And that those of us who are not cab drivers find a way to fit ourselves into what cab drivers need, and that we find a way to get cab drivers to the goal they have identified, as opposed to coming in and saying, you know, this is what I would like to see for you and this is how it ought to be done.
Thank you, Aurora Vasquez. Tony Norman, I will get your thoughts before we turn to New York and to Barivi Desai and an interview that Will Martin did with her from Tuesday.
My only comment is that drivers need to help raise the consciousness, and this show is designed to raise the consciousness of the public and the regulators and taxicab drivers of the issues that are happening. So I will say that what you can do, if you're a driver listening, you can put on your cell phone and air this show in your cab, and you can encourage other cab drivers to listen to this show or put this show on their cell phone so that passengers, and every Saturday, they can raise the consciousness of what's happening in this community as it relates to taxi cab drivers. That's the least you can do as a driver, to raise the consciousness among other drivers and your passengers. If they don't want to hear it, they'll just say they don't want to hear it. But I think a lot of passengers will be interested in some of the issues if you're playing it while they're getting into your cab.
Of course, it's live 7 to 8 p.m. here on WST, 1120 a.m., but you can get all the archives at thefightback.org. One word, thefightback.org. So you can go there to check that out. I want to thank you, Aurora Vasquez. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to have you weigh in on different struggles in this region, and you've been at it for a while, and I do appreciate that. I want to turn to New York, where cab drivers protested outside City Hall this week ahead of the Taxi and Limousine Commission's scheduled June 20th vote on new rules. These changes will take away the hard-earned raises drivers finally won after 8 long years, according to a press release from the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. The Taxi Link's Will Martin attended the protest and interviewed Barivi Desai, leader of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance and the AFL-CIO Chartered National Taxi Workers Alliance.
Well, hundreds of drivers gathered out here today on the steps of City Hall, the people's steps, to send a message to the mayor and to our city council who appoint the board members on the Taxi and Limousine Commission, which is our regulatory agency. TLC is getting ready to vote on June 20th on a swooping set of, 12 regulations that would really crush the income of taxi drivers. And this is after we finally won a fare raise less than a year ago. So what these 12 new rules would do is essentially raise the lease, the money that the drivers pay to the companies, and so it would drain us of our income. So they include, for example, and if there is an accident or any kind of a mechanical mishap, even though the garage owns the car, they're responsible for the maintenance, for the servicing. They have their own mechanic shops. They're responsible for the insurance. They choose the policy, the coverage, all of that. But still, the garages want to pass down the cost of the repairs onto the drivers. In our city, that has been unheard of because New York City taxi drivers pay really high leases for a shift. And so if we have to pay for repairs, it just not only would it be economically crushing, but we just think at the heart of it, it is such an attack on any sense of even consumer rights that we might have.
May 14th, the National Taxi Workers, the New York Taxi Workers Alliance managed to get a TLC meeting canceled. Could you step through how you managed to get that to happen?
Well, in the old-fashioned way, we had hundreds of drivers. We filled up the street the street on which the TLC headquarters is located. We had hundreds of drivers during rush hour. No cars. It was just people. We were standing out there shouting, holding up signs. We had a lot of media presence out there. And we really brought out this issue of what these 12 new rules are going to do to the livelihoods of drivers. And as a result of it, there's been a lot of contention and division on the TLC board. We're not there yet, but neither are the fleets. We know that we have 3 supporters right now. The other 5 commissioners are more in line with the fleets, but we do believe that at least 1 or 2 of them can be brought over to understand that this is a simple matter of justice. You don't give with one hand and take it away with the other.
So you think with as a direct result of drivers' activism, the TLC is paying, do you think they're at least paying much more respect to drivers than they were before?
Oh, without a doubt. And not just the TLC, even the media and the public at large. I mean, there's no question, right, that we still have a really long way to go. And there's still too many issues around safety and all of that that the drivers face. But I'll tell you, when I first started organizing in 1996, when our organization first started, every year the tabloid papers in New York would run a front page article of the 10 worst drivers and put photos of the drivers. And then in 1998, we went out on strike. In 2007, we went out on strike. Since those days of the strikes in 98, I've never seen a front page like that again. When workers stand up, everyone follows.
What do you think is the secret to organizing drivers?
It's the magic is with the drivers. Drivers know. We working people in general know in their heart and in their gut when they see an issue of justice. The mistake that drivers, too many of our brothers and sister drivers make, is they ask themselves, if I stand up, will it do anything? Don't ask yourself that question. Ask yourself, do I see injustice? And if you see injustice, then rise up. Eventually we can defeat it. It is the oldest story in the history of the world that the people united cannot be defeated. It is the only way to make change.
Do you... couple last questions. Do you have any special message for drivers in Washington who are currently going through a lot right now?
Absolutely. We want to say to our brothers and sisters in Washington, D.C., that you have our support and our solidarity. We've been following this struggle. We understand the issue with the technology and the meters that the drivers have been facing over the past several years. We have gone through that. We've walked that path ourselves. You know, so we understand that the directness of that struggle. We also know that safety is a major issue for drivers in D.C., you know, and we're really saddened to hear about the driver brother who was killed just recently in D.C. And so, you know, all of these issues, though, the only way that we're ever going to change them is to be united. And we, in New York City, in Philadelphia, in Austin, Texas, we're all part of the National Taxi Workers Alliance. And we await the day when we can say that the drivers of Washington, D.C. are also part of the National Taxi Workers Alliance. Well, how can we have a national movement if those that move the capital of this country are not part of it? We need the drivers in D.C., not only so we can improve the conditions in D.C. itself, but because only drivers, city to city, can build our power.
That was Beravi Desai, leader of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance and the AFL-CIO Chartered National Taxi Workers Alliance. She spoke with the Taxi Link's Will Martin in New York on Tuesday. Tony Norman, a quick final thought before we head out.
Just that, once again, I can say it a thousand times, we need to raise the consciousness of taxi cab drivers, we need to raise the consciousness of our leaders, and raise the consciousness of the general public. We'll be at 15th and U, Northwest Washington, at the Meridian Spot, if you have any questions or if you want to get an autograph.
You're giving autographs, Tony?
So you can stop by and get Pete Tucker's autograph or Aurora's. Well, we'll be there.
You're welcome to join us, Aurora's drivers are. You can get Tony Norman's autograph. I didn't know. We're going to get crowds, hordes down there. But
and I'll have pictures of myself also.
All right. It's getting late. Thank you so much for tuning in. This show is produced by Will Martin and expertly engineered by Mark Taylor. It'll all be posted at thefightback.org. So spread the word. Let people know they can listen on their phone anytime online at thefightback.org. And if you speak Amharic, you do need to tune in starting in just a few minutes to the Saturday evening phone conference that takes place. Till next week, I'm Pete Tucker with Tony Norman. Peace.